are about to experience Jackson Snyder Presents. We will examine the life of our master Yeshua by discovering his ancestors, family, and friends, by reviewing rare ancient manuscripts, and speaking to those who know him best. From the Vero Essene Yahad, now experience Jackson Snyder Presents.
Contact us at yahad.me.
Unclean spirit.
Contact us at yahad.me.
We're talking about people that are either totally possessed or deeply oppressed. There's deep integration with a person's own psyche to the point where the person is confused now as to which is which, whether it's them or something inside of them. But it appears like when something comes to them, they have to accept it to some extent for it to start worming its way in. And there's this other question of, can demons oppress Christians? And if you read Mark chapter 5 about the legion, in the original language, it looks very much like this is a believer who actually says, I know you, you're the son of Elohim. Is that the demon or is that the legion? He comes up, recognizes it, and comes up, perhaps because now he knows that here's the one that can coming by that can free him. And of course, when he's freed, he becomes the first recorded evangelist, going back to tell others about it. It's all mysterious. I mentioned before, this kahuna religion of Hawaii has a real good theories about the broken up nature of incorporeal spirits. I had a book on kahuna knowledge. I got three or four of them now, but this one book I got really got into theoretical part of it, and I can't find it now. But anyway, I've told this story before, but I want to go into a little more depth with it, and I'll try to start from the beginning. I was in the seminary. This was in the early 90s, and I had a friend. I made a friend from the Church of Christ. And at that time, I carried oil in my pocket wherever I went. And when there was a need, I just whipped it out. Of course, asking somebody, let me anoint you with oil. And there were quite a few turnarounds with that. Well, this fellow from the Church of Christ, who was studying to be a full-fledged pastor, surprisingly enough that he was there, because by and large, those people from Church of Christ, they do not go into any higher education except that of their own church. They're very xenophobic, and they are taught from the very first that these kinds of manifestations are gone with the apostles. Any kind of spiritual gift, so-called, is of the devil. And if you find somebody that speaks in tongues, for instance, well, millions of people do, I think half genuine, maybe half false, but these people can do this because they're filled with the devil. They're possessed. So they call themselves the only real New Testament church. Some of those, of course, of that same general denomination use music and some don't. The ones that don't, they think that organs and musical instruments are all of the devil and they're not mentioned in the New Testament. When they really are, aren't the Psalms quoted in the New Testament? Some of these churches have even gone so far as to say that there's no salvation outside of the Church of Christ. I've only been in one of them in my life. It was a non-instrumental church, and I just went in there on a Sunday night. I had an appointment in another church, but it was canceled. So I saw that church. I thought, I'll go in here. I've never been in here before. And when that preacher started to preach, he looked straight at me and started preaching on baptism, because they believe that their baptism saves a person. It saves the person. Of course, they quote 2 Peter, I don't know, 2 or 3, 4, something like that. Baptism now saves you. So these folks are very narrow-minded. They're low on the stages of faith, clear at the bottom. As I said, xenophobic, very phobic towards any kind of higher education, unless it's in their own church. So I made friends with this fellow, and he saw some of the things my friends that had the oil were doing. And so he wanted to know more. And he confessed that if my pastor knew I was even with you guys, I would lose my position in the church and every Church of Christ. So he fellowshipped with the Church of Christ in Atlanta. That's where I was, at Emory University at this time, as I said, 92 to 94. And in the local church, somebody was complaining about her husband. He had become a whole different person in the last couple of years. And the story went this way, that he had a flat tire on the interstate, and he was changing that tire, and he got run over by a church van barreling down the interstate. It didn't kill him, but it broke his spine and his neck and left him in a quadriplegic situation. He didn't lose his faith, even during this time. It was only recently, after these years that he had been confined to the bed, that he began to manifest. And now they had to strap him in to the bed. And his wife said to me, when Tim, the young pastor, got us together. She said, I've been warned about this. That is to say, warned about people trying to help her husband in this way. And she warned me. She said, you know, they'll excommunicate us if they find out that I've even talked to you. And I said, well, let's go over there, if you'll permit that, and let's just probe and see what happens. And so he was in a nursing home. My friend, another oil carrier, and the young pastor from the Church of Christ, and the wife was there at this time. And there was Stephen in the bed, emaciated, roped down, you know, belted down. And when I looked at him, I had some discernment. Of course, I didn't see this with my eyes. I kind of saw it in the spirit that there was something like an octopus on top of him with its tentacles on his arms and its head, his head in its head, in that big eye. And it became a kind of a vision that whenever I looked at him, I saw this. But that wasn't enough. You know, we talked for a little bit. He could not talk. But he did things with his eyes, and he poked with a stick and so forth to make himself known. And so we prayed, and I went around the back of the bed where he couldn't see me. And I thought, I'm going to stand back here where he can't see me, and I am going to use a warfare tongues and see if anything happens. And I did, but I didn't do it out loud. I just moved my lips and spoke very softly under my breath so he could not hear. There's no way he could hear. And immediately, that fellow started trying to wrench free, and he went into almost a convulsion trying to get free. And I came back around, and his face was screwed up in such a way that he didn't even look human anymore. And of course, the wife said, oh, there it's happening again. And off to the side, I told my partner there, I said, well, I probed him back there with warfare tongues. And he did this. So my friend said, go do it again. And so he calmed down and everything. And I went back there again. And I must have stood back there 15 minutes without doing anything. And then I started again. And again, instantly, when the tongue started rolling out, he started worse than before, like he was in convulsions, just shaking like crazy and trying his might, whatever muscle he had left, to get out of that bed and get out of there. All right. So I came back around, and the visit ended. And we explained it to his wife, what was going on. She was very cautious. She was very concerned that the devilish manifestation was coming from me, because I had stood back there and spoken in tongues under my breath. So it come at me. And I said, well, that's not the case. We've got a little experience with this. And I'm sorry what your church teaches, but you ask us here, and we want to see if there's anything here that could be in him that is causing him to be this way. She said, oh, people come in and pray for him all the time, but he doesn't do this. Of course, they wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that. When you get to this stage, it seems they seek attention. And of course, that fellow laying in the bed for years would want some kind of attention. I felt so sorry for him. He was like a wounded mouse with a great big old cat in the room with him. And in the spirit, I could see this thing moving off. There's a second bed in the room, and it seemed to just move off as we were leaving. So we made an appointment to come back again. And a week went by. His wife consented. A week went by, and we came back. This time, I didn't probe him. The minute he saw me, he started going into that again. Of course, what I'm thinking is there any way to do some deliverance ministry on him? One thing you must have in cases like this, it's just not spiritual strength. That doesn't do it. Compassion. You see over and over again in the Gospels, he had compassion on the crowds. He had compassion for somebody. This one he loved, or he liked, in the case of Lazarus. The compassion has to be there. Some people aren't naturally compassionate. I'm not. That's something, I'm emotionally pretty distant. But years before, I prayed to have a gift of compassion. I was working with those children in Haiti, And I didn't feel anything for him. I felt sorry for him, but no love and compassion. I prayed that if I was going to work in that ministry, that I would be able to feel that kind of passion. Compassion is love in action, as you know, and it makes you feel bad sometimes because your spirit is grieved by what you see, by the plight of other people who are not fortunate like you are. I can't think of anybody more unfortunate at this point than Stephen, who, as I think I mentioned before, had risen up into the church to becoming a deacon and a leader of children, and he wanted to go on to be a professional child minister, his wife said. But now he was way too buggered up. And who's to say that whatever manifested in him wasn't keeping him from being healed? That's often the case. Disease, injury, anything bad that happens seems to draw these things in. Like I said, the cat is seeing a little meal here, an easy picking to come in and enter in. And all that lonely man had to do was invite a companion to get started. Obviously, he'd done more than this by this time, because she said that he'd been in his right mind all this time while in the bed, but only now coherent. So out in the hall, I told her, the wife, this is an impossible situation. If only we had a private place to do this, then we could make some headway. I mentioned to him, you see the manifestation here. You see how he reacts to me, not to you, not to the other guys, just to me, because I probed him. And I reiterated to her that there's no way in the world he could have known except by demonic discernment of spirits. She was so intimidated by her pastor and the fear of being kicked out of the church. And there were all the time nurses' aides coming in. I mean, we didn't hardly have a few minutes with him alone that they didn't come in for some little thing or the other. It's like it was a conspiracy, because we spent a couple hours altogether there, and it seemed like when we would get in some serious prayer, they would come in. It's like they were his familiars or something. So after explaining the impossible manner of the situation, unless we could get him home, which we could have done, she just gave in. Now, here was a case where if it were me, I'd try anything. I would try anything to get my spouse out of a situation like that. If I didn't know any better, if I had to call a witch doctor, who wouldn't? People do it all the time, trying to get some relief for their loved one. So my one friend and I and the young pastor, we went away feeling very dismayed. Here's a situation, there was nothing we could do. And we were so busy, all of us. I had three churches at that time. I lived 100 miles away from the school, and I was there every day and night until late, driving back and forth 100 miles each way. And the academic burden was huge. Plus, besides the three churches, you have to do two supervised volunteer ministries too. So time was very limited. But the coursework was really intense, and it brought my friend and I into a lot of situations where we could work in this manner. If only we could do it with some privacy. Dismaying. I still think today how sad it is. And I think of that Alice Cooper song, Stephen. It describes this guy's situation almost perfectly. Now, I don't have any doubt that you all have had experiences that made you think there was something going on that wasn't of this physical world. And there are some sure signs of the reality of spiritual evil that I want to share with you. And a few of these I have experienced myself with other people primarily. And the first one of these is the activity of a poltergeist. What that entails is moving objects. In my case, it was electronics all turning on at the same time. Or the destruction of objects, broken mirrors, plates flying around. Without a physical cause, at least not one that's known, Slamming of doors is a big one. Footsteps, yes. Big footsteps with nothing there. Evidence of footprints, and for me, evidence of the weight of one of these big entities on my friend's bed, not to mention being attacked myself three times and being there to witness that deputy being knocked on his ass by an entity he said came right out of the tree. Loud noises, again, that you can't explain. Movements of furniture, again, without a known physical cause. Another thing that happened to me on this line is that I was praying for a woman that had a reputation of being a witch. I come over a couple nights before, her husband was having a heart attack, and I had some natokinase at that time. I've kept with me all the time because I was having them too. I stuffed the natokinase in his mouth, and the heart attack stopped. I came back a week later to see how he was. He wasn't there. They'd put him in the hospital after that, but she was there. And so after talking to her a little bit, I asked her if I could pray for her, and I did. I laid hands on her because she gave me some request in her body. And the strangest thing started happening. Pulling on my shirt, tapping on my neck when I was praying for her behind my back, pulling. She wasn't doing it. Nobody was back there. And I just kept on going. I thought, well, what is this? It was poltergeist activity. What else could it be? It wasn't a matter of a little tap. I mean, a pulling like this. I don't know if that's, I guess that would be considered poltergeist because there was no physical cause for it. Another one is levitation. I've never seen this personally, but I've read it in account after account. And the one I brought up with the Professor Carl, he levitated with 6-7 people present in the room, lifted right up off the couch he was on, levitated right in thin air for 15 minutes. Now, how does somebody do that? They say these are bodiless spirits, but there's got to be a body to make that happen. And certainly that's not something that you can really fake unless you're at a seance and it's all dark. But a person defies gravity and, again, elevated without a physical cause. A third one is, despite what their size is, the excessive weight of an individual. Even a small individual can become so heavy that they're impossible to lift, even with several strong men. They sometimes collapse beds, break down furniture while they're reclining. This is something that I have seen too. So bizarre. And I've seen this in women, trying to pick them off the floor that they were so heavy, even four of us couldn't get them up. Stiff too. Stiff and heavy. The fourth is telepathy. Again, we have to distinguish spiritual gifts from psychic gifts. They're both real, but they're both completely different. If we pursue psychic gifts thinking they're spiritual gifts, we will open ourselves up to something that gets bigger and bigger. But telepathy, the ability to read the minds, especially in the course of an exorcism, or communicate with remote individuals, or affect phones or other any kind of informational devices, or affect electronic objects. I've noticed in so-called haunted houses that I have been in, a lot of zipping, a lot of electrical noise, a lot of things falling around. Being in there with the power of the Holy Spirit, that's different than just going in. So telepathy, or the alteration of communication in one way or the other. There's remote movement, or the destruction of religious objects. Consider, again, the boy, Eddie, who even at a very young age came to hate the blood of Jesus. Consider, again, the boy, Eddie, who even at a very young age came to hate the blood of Jesus so much that his face would contort at the sight of a communion cup, or people being able to move things at a distance. There's something doing that. It's not all that incorporeal. understanding and sometimes speaking foreign languages with proficiency. I've studied several languages, studied them very well. And sometimes when I was in the charismatic crowd, I could tell without spiritual discernment what they were saying to some extent. I remember the first time was with my mother praying in tongues. That was when I was studying Latin in school. And she was speaking Latin, but she was speaking it in the spirit. And I knew that because I could translate what she was saying. But oftentimes when we read about bona fide exorcisms, we find that if the spirit is talking to an educated person who knows foreign languages, they find their own proficiency in those languages, and especially Latin, Greek, Semitic languages, ancient Babylonian. Number seven, knowing the personal secrets and sins of the exorcist or the one trying to do the delivery and the team members there. If you've got a team and you get something to manifest there and it's talkative, you want to keep them quiet. You need to know the name? Well, yes, it's helpful for you to know something, anything that they will respond to. One name they do respond to all the time. That's Jesus or Yahshua. But those things coming out of the ground, they didn't. They didn't. That is so strange when I think of it. We finally got rid of those with praise. After 4 years, we would curse them, send them to the feet of Jesus, send them to hell, send them to the flame, send them to the abyss, and they would cut off for a while. But then they'd come back, and the threats had to be harsher and harsher and harsher. Knowledge of personal secrets. And where do you think they get those from? Well, it's not just one demon that you're dealing with here. You're dealing with a unit, a legion, a many, a connection, a network. And remember, the one you're primarily dealing with at first is called the precept. You got to get rid of him before you can get to whatever the bigger thing is. Sometimes what you can do is command them all to be bound up into one bag or one package. Sometimes this will work, especially if you get to know a little bit something that's in there. Bind them as one package. Send them to the feet of Yahshua. Where else can you send them? We don't know what to do with them except to send them to him, to have him do what he will. Spirits of earth, wind, water, fire, netherworld, and gloom. This is a terminology, technical terms of what these things are from ancient times. Sometimes we can just call them out that way, and it works. But when you've got somebody that has given their members up, that's often a little bit harder, a little bit. I've never been in a long-standing deliverance, just short ones. What I read about is that they are so exacting, especially for the exorcist, that they lead to health problems eventually, certainly fatigue, passing out. And of course, with this network knowledge, they can know what your personal sins are or what you are guilty about. Not that they're even sins. We know that sin is transgression of the Torah. But what I've heard is they'll point out things that we know are not sins, but they embarrass us. They're embarrassing. Number eight, the appearance of dark figures, animals, insects, apparitions, ghosts. The first time I ever got a visual on anything like this was when a very large wolf-like animal jumped into my bed, breathed in my face, slobbered all over me, eyes like coals of fire. I was 17 years old. I had been reading a book on demonic angels from an occult bookstore. I'd just come back from Chicago, and I was lapping this stuff up because I was stupid at that time. But I found something out about this. I swear to you, this was not a dream. This was whatever it was in the body, and it was hefty, very heavy, right on top of me, paws on my shoulders, making impression on the bed, and slobbering all over everything, looking me right in the face. That thing dispersed with the name of Jesus very quickly, as scary as it was. I found that that is also very effective on dogs and animals, at least animals that are angry. Doesn't seem to work too good on dogs that are just annoying you to pieces, and they do seem to want to come around me and annoy me. I feel like dogs are unclean. We got into problems at our first time up on Goshen Mountain because we were having services, and the owner of that property let his dogs run in the service. They're jumping up on people when we were having a holy time of worship. And I'm sorry, I lost my temper. I said, get those dogs out of here. I wasn't thinking about whose dogs they were, yet they were causing the worship to be so disrupted that, you know, the rest of the day they're out there playing. They had to come in during the service. They were drawn there. Animals are aware of these things. Animals and children are easy prey. Yet every near possession, they're not all the same. They vary so much. Some demonized people, when you work with them, they have very few of these kind of paranormal features. But what I'm sure for you is that you've seen a person's face change all of a sudden. You might have also seen a person grinning in such a way as they don't even look human anymore. I have a friend here in this area. She's confined to a couple of rooms now with COPD so bad that she has been having visitors. This is a woman of Elohim with spiritual gifts. She has been having the visitor of a man with a crystal face, shiny crystal face, and a little girl. I ask her, how often do they come? This is recently. She says, oh, one or two of them will come around every night. She said, there's another one that's just dark. I say, how do you handle that, Yvonne? She says, I didn't know what to do at first. They just stand there looking at me. The little girl keeps coming closer. I said, do you rebuke them in the name of Jesus or anything? She's a sacred name or two. She said, no, I just tell them, you don't belong here. You have to go away. This is another case where I would like to sit in on this, but she's in a semi-institutional environment. And it sure wouldn't look good with me sitting in her bedroom all night. But I'm curious. And I'm curious to see if there wouldn't be some way to get rid of those things altogether. I mean, how would you like to have beings, unlike any human, coming into your bedroom of a night when you were incapacitated? I can't think of anything much scarier than that. When I was a child, my own son would go into fits at night. When he would go to bed, after he'd been asleep a while, he would fall out of the bed nightly, bang. So what we had to do is we put a strap in that bed that strapped him around the waist so he couldn't fall out anymore. And I just felt sorry for him, but I sat with him one night and I asked him, what is going on with you falling out of the bed? He says, I wake up and some things are coming out of this closet. Right across from his head was a closet. I didn't doubt that at all, but I taught my kids what to do in cases like that. If you got grandchildren and they have this kind of problem, you can teach them too to get rid of them in the name or plead the blood. And that's what my son did. After a couple nights, that was the end of him. I didn't doubt him a bit. I see some parents say, oh, you're just imagining things. Or, you're just seeing things, or your little friends are not real, but they are real to those children, and children see much more than we do. But all of these particular manifestations have been seen by multiple witnesses and documented over and over and over again. There's also some behavioral manifestations that I'll go through briefly, and then we'll be done. Trance-like states, very frequently. Often with eyes rolled back, eyes wide open, eyes rolled back, catatonic states. Sometimes when you're trying to work these things out of these people in their catatonic, they'll all of a sudden come awake full of blasphemous, violent outbursts. Sometimes even trying to get you or whoever happens to be there. This is one reason why a team is often required for people that are very much possessed. If they're completely possessed, there's not much help for them. If they've given in totally, not much help. I hope that next week for the forum on Shabbat at 1 o'clock, I put out on the event, have I put it out yet? I think so. A link, I'm not sure. I want you to listen to a 40-minute drama that has a lot to do with what I'm saying right now as far as behavioral manifestations of a demon-possessed person. And so if it's not out there on that event, then I'll see that it's put out there when I get done here. Scratching on the body, scratching oneself, cutting oneself, sometimes scratching words on the body. These scratches are not produced by the subject or anyone else. They just appear. In Ken Summerall's classic case in the Philippines, which I believe is up on YouTube, classic case, I mentioned it the other day, was Smith Wigglesworth, where the prostitute who was in the jail cell right in front of Summerall and the police that were there began to manifest being torn apart as though with razor blades all over. Cuts that just appeared, cuts that tore her clothes clear off. And this was the thing that she said had been attacking her for quite some time. But their intention was to put her in a mental institute. That's why she was in jail. Put her in with the rest of the demon possessed. Thank goodness, Kenneth Summerall, Lester Summerall was there. He took care of it. There's a revulsion toward anything religious. That is church too. Revolted by church. I think some people on Facebook, even in the think tank, are demonized about this because they are so against church as to be unnaturally against church. Same with these people that talk about Jesus. If they're not blaspheming, they are most definitely obsessed with this corrupt idea that Jesus is a mixture between Gaia and Zeus. I think if you were around in the think tank a couple of years ago, some of these vegetarians and vegans were definitely possessed with something militant, hateful, hateful to the core. There are some people that you are friends with that come up with outrageous ideas and stick to them as though they were obsessed with them and will take on all comers. I'd like to mention a couple, but I won't. Fear or revulsion at the name of Jesus, hatred of religious objects, destruction of religious objects, hatred of the Bible, can't stand the Bible. I know most of us came from Protestantism, but holy water causes them pain, being touched by certain artifacts, even rosary beads will do it sometime. That's why so many houses have these little idols up every place. You don't know what's in those things. My father worked in Haiti for years. He said, never buy the mahogany and take it home. Why? Because it's all cursed through the practice of voodoo. And you take it home, whatever it was cursed with, chances are it's going to come right with you. Secretions, vomiting, defecating, urinating, pouring out of the eyes, ears, nose especially. I've seen a lot of that. I believe it. It's a good thing it happens because you don't have to be inquisitive about it anymore. Because what they do is beyond normal bodily capacity. Sometimes they exhibit remarkable strength. I was speaking to Allison about one particular fellow I remember that we had to stop because my wife and I, were so scared. This guy got so strong, we were afraid he was going to kill us both. Not to mention the foster daughter we had, chasing us around the house with knives, butcher knives, so strong she could break through a door. That's demonic. The presence of another personality or personalities frequently manifesting in deep guttural voices. Sometimes the voice even comes forth when the jaw is clamped shut. Sometimes the voice comes from objects that are in the room or in the next room. This is one of the things that this recording that I have for you for Forum is about. Voices. Guttural voices. Have you ever talked to people whose voices change when they found out you're religious? Sometimes they go up into a childlike voice, especially people with, what do they call that? Bipolar and borderline mental disorders. That happens a lot with them. Or dependent personality disorder, when somebody, especially a woman, wants to get her way. You'll hear the voice and the vocabulary completely change. And as I mentioned before, irregular, almost impossible facial features, sometimes manifesting an evil face with an evil smile. As Malachi Martin and the other psychotherapist remarked, they had never seen faces like the faces on some of these people who permitted their exorcism to be recorded. Completely inhuman. And what I've seen is reptilian. I've seen a lot of these kind of faces, but probably the strangest one, I saw a woman whose head turned purple and spun around. I'm not kidding. While I was preaching, I saw this. My brother has amazing discernment. He has seen things all his life. He doesn't talk about them anymore, though. I wish he did. I tried to get him to talk about them. He used to tell the story of the Presbyterian pastor. He was invited to a church service, and the Presbyterian pastor was talking about a Latin word, veritus, or we would say veritas, means truth. My brother, and I believe him, watched while that pastor behind the pulpit grew to upward of 14 feet with foam on the side of his mouth with a caption on the phone, on the foam, veritas, truth. Was the foam of his mouth. My brother left. There were times also when in living in Haiti, this is one of the reasons he quit Haiti, my next brother, is that during one of their coup d'etats, he heard people sneaking up around the house, and he went to the window and he saw them with guns coming around the house to kill him. Woke his wife up. He said, "We have to pray for angels. We have to pray. They're coming to kill us." And they went outside to face these people. And what happened was angels came and circled around these people. My brother said, "Look, look." And the angels behind them, which were tall with swords, scared these people off. That was a testimony to him for his whole life. I wish you would still talk about things like that, because now, having spent 40 years in communist China, I think he would have plenty to say. Maybe someday he will. And finally, extreme bodily contortions. Sometimes people seem to get into impossible positions. That's what I think of when I see people doing yoga. I'm not judging yoga, but each yoga position is meant to be impossible. What you do there is just a facsimile of the real position. And each position, so I've read, is a praise position to one of their thousands of gods. I don't think that even Christian yoga is that benign. I would be afraid to be around that with people fully involved. A few other effects that are of the environment. I mentioned poltergeist activities. I want to give you a chance to talk. I'm about done. A drop in the room temperature. You felt it get cold before. I know you have. Acrid, putrid stench. I call those stink demons. Many times. Out of the blue. A very foul smell, like sewage. Pressure on the chest. A feeling of a dark or dangerous alien presence in the room, especially when you're with somebody that is demonized. Now, I want to spend a little bit of time listening to you. If this, I have a couple of cases here that I thought I'd bring up maybe next time that will, I'm sure you'll be interested in. I am not doing this for the sake of sensationalism. I feel that the Father has told me to do this. I've kept these things back because I just didn't want to talk about them. But now I'm getting them out. I'm feeling stronger and stronger in the spirit. And I'm almost feeling like pretty soon, if somebody comes along that needs it, we'll be ready. Now, I asked Anne Burnett to testify, if she would, a little about what she's seen, because she's been through a lot of this. Would you, Anne, if you're still awake?
Okay, there we go.
Can't hear you. You're muted.
Well, you'll have to unmute me.
I fixed it.
Okay, am I still muted?
You're good.
Okay. I've had a lot of things happen to me since actually in the womb. And I only know that because Ruach HaKodesh ministered that to me when I was 33 years old. So there's very much that I could talk about. But what would you like to isolate? What type of
I want what comes to mind now that you've heard this. You already know all this stuff.
Well, there's one that might minister to a lot of people. It's a very simple one, but it might be a universal one as well. And it was something, it had to do with my sister, and it had to do with obedience, in that my sister was an alcoholic, and she was becoming very, very, very sick. And we had rescued her time and time again. Different members of the family had come to her rescue, and she had finally just exhausted everyone. And I came to the town where she lived and moved there, actually. And so I became her new best friend in the family because I was not exhausted. And I loved her, but I didn't know all the history that the rest of the family knew, and I'm glad I didn't. She became very, very sick from the alcohol, and I tried to help. But when I consulted Father, there came a time when he said, I want you to leave her alone. Well, that was very difficult because you want to help, but the help was me leaving her alone. And so for 2 weeks, I couldn't contact her. I had moved her into a house a couple of blocks away, and I had to obey. So I obeyed. And one evening, about 11 in the evening, Ruach HaKodesh said, go to her now. And I went, and I had to break in the house, had to go through a window, and finally aroused her. She was nearly dead. And I aroused her. It frightened her. She was very, very frightened. And I just kept saying, it's Ann, it's Ann. And she calmed. And I immediately, just without even no preparation whatsoever, but I was prepared, because not only had I obeyed, but I was consulting Father concerning her. I was interceding for her. I was petitioning Yahweh on her behalf all this time. And so I was ready, without even knowing what I was going to do. I was ready. And I just, out of my mouth came, leave her now in the name of Yahshua HaMashiach. And out it went, out the window. Out it went, just that easy. And never came back. And that was 9 years ago. And she slept for 2 days. And there were some things that I said to her that night. And I said, this is not who you are. You were created for a special purpose, and you will live to live that purpose. And when she finally came awake, she looked for her car keys, which I had taken, and she was going to go get more vodka. And she went to the bathroom. She looked in the mirror, and she called me later and said, Ann, the strangest thing happened. I looked in the mirror, and I said to myself, this is not who you are. You were created for a special purpose, and you will live to perform that purpose. And then she added, you are not getting any more vodka. And she never did. She never did. So I think the point of that is it doesn't have to be a laborious situation.
Exactly.
Yeshua never, Yahshua, when they knew he was coming, they were afraid of him. So they bowed to him. They said, please, please, please. They begged him for mercy. So it just doesn't have to be this big, big deal. It's just you just have to be prepared and be compassionate, like you said. And the Ruach HaKodesh takes over. That's what I believe.
And that's exactly right. I think that we get so many manifestations a lot of times because the person that is trying to do it just simply isn't prepared by the spirit to do it. Just because a person knows how. You notice something else about that testimony. She didn't remember a thing.
No, she didn't remember anything. She didn't even remember me being there, which had nothing to do with me. I was just the conduit he used for that purpose. So it didn't matter that she doesn't remember. To this day, she doesn't remember. And oddly enough, to this day, she is not a believer.